This podcast is from heptagonclub.co.uk and paulcarenza.com. The Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza. 7 guests, 7 corners.
On this week's show.
You're an other, so you Brits are others.
Thank you.
Right.
I felt that personally.
It's got to be 15, because that's my average age so far.
What in life? What?
My eldest son is called Tom. He's 19. He is Spider-Man.
And your host,
Mr. Paul Carenza.
Hello, welcome to the Heptagon Club. Thank you for joining us. This is episode 4, and welcome to this brave new world. Well, it has to be brave because, well, we need to be. This is our first Trumpian podcast. How are we doing? I hope all right. This week it's movie night. We've got two film reviewers of our 7 guests this week. One who is the editor of Empire magazine, and the other will be reviewing every film she's ever seen. But it won't take long because she's only seen 2. We've also got a local venture about how to do cinema differently, and we've got the brilliant comedian Dominic Holland with his tale of how his son overtook him career-wise to become the new Spider-Man. Yeah, we've got my 3-year-old daughter, we've got a brief reunion of my chums John and Jen from my old Movie Banter podcast, and we go live via FaceTime to, well, the home of cinema, then south a bit, and then you keep going till you hit Mexico, San Diego, basically, to our American correspondent, American Dave, who'll be beating around the bush politically and trying to make sense of a wall that he may be able to see from his house. So on this podcast, it's 7 guests, 7 corners, and hey, spot the links this week to all things 7 planted throughout the show. I can predict, I think, at least 3 film-based 7-ish references. 3, not 7, unfortunately, but you can't have everything. Thank you for rating us on iTunes. People have. Thank you for that. It's vastly appreciated. The more of you do that, the more likely it is to get Apple's new podcast's radar and generally encourage others this way as well. So please do that. Thank you. Thank you also for your correspondence. We have had actual correspondence, especially since last week's Miranda Hart episode, when she urged listeners to email in pictures of stickers on fruit. Tabitha in New Zealand, surely our furthest flung listener, until we get one on the moon. Tabitha has sent in a picture of her stickered fruit. I will try and describe it because it's a photo and this is an audio medium. It's a kiwi with a sticker saying Family Kiwi Gold Organic 9-3279. New Zealand written on it. So there you go, that's the sticker on that fruit. Any more, please do send those in. Can't wait to get them.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Dom. How
hello,
you doing?
Hello, Paul. Nice to see you.
The first of our 7 guests this week, a top comedian, one of my favourites.
Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. Thank you for being here at our podcast kind of
delighted to be kind of thing. As ever.
With his amazing tale of comedy, Hollywood and Marvel comic books, Dominic Holland.
So going back then, when did you start as a stand-up then? What was your...
Back in the day, gosh, 1991 it would have been.
91?
Yes. A long time.
That's amazing. And then you had that quite... Was it quite a sharp trajectory,
it was.
Would you say?
It was a very steep learning curve, and I got up quite quickly. So quite quickly, 93, I was recognised in Edinburgh, and then I was on tour with Eddie Izzard. And I just quite quickly found a 20-minute set, which turned into an hour set, that was really effective. So I was winning awards and was getting loads of work. And I think because I looked so young, and I was really young, that's why my trajectory was going to be, here's the guy next in line. And then I think I sort of had a crisis of confidence, so it wasn't all just, you know, the gatekeeper's fault. I mean, I'm not a terribly confident person. I think some of the more successful comics aren't necessarily the funniest. I just think they've just got balls of steel and get out of my way. And I was always a little bit more polite and self-doubting than that. So the combination of those two things, and then getting older, clearly,
right,
you know, we all get older.
These things happen. Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that goes against you, because even though I look young, people know how long I've been around.
Right.
And, the TV companies are like, we want 25-year-olds and 35-year-olds, and we've got enough white middle-class heterosexuals who we haven't got a drink problem.
Okay, exactly. TV devours new faces and all these things, and they want these things.
Yeah.
But you've never stopped working, you know.
No.
You're always gigging. You're gigging tonight.
Yeah, gigging, and I love work. I love gigging, Paul. Mm. I like the challenge of there's a room of people, and it's my job. Mm. Just all I'm going to get is an amplification.
Yep.
And it's my job.
Great.
And all the client says, or all the club says, is we're going to give you 20 minutes or 40 minutes, and your job is to go on stage and rock this room. Because if you're on last, or you're the only comic on, as it is tonight with me, you better be on your toes. Because you can't come off and say, gosh, sorry about that. That was new stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to say, we wanted the old stuff.
Exactly.
We wanted the stuff that we've seen before that was bloody funny.
Yeah. no.
And I like that challenge. And I've been a little bit more diverse. I write books, and I've written scripts, and and writing novels for me is really what I love doing, because then there's no nerves involved. You can rewrite, you can change, you can get friends to look at, and then you can spend time really gestating a great story before you start writing. So I've written five books, and I'm really proud of all of them. The last one is a book I would plug, because I've given it to a charity. I've given it to the Anthony Nolan Trust.
Okay.
And I had an idea in my head for a story, and I wanted something extraordinary to happen. And the extraordinary thing that happens is to do with a child with an illness. And so I sort of started to think, well, maybe I should make it an Anthony Nolan illness, because I know the charity. And then it occurred to me, well, actually, wouldn't it be exciting if I were to offer this book to the charity, and then people in buying it and reading it would then raise money. The more people they can put on their register, the more chances they have of saving people's lives. There's 700 people a year in the United Kingdom who are alive every year, who wouldn't be alive without their registers. It's entirely self-funding. And so I just quite seduced by the idea that Open Links is the name of the book, and I don't know how many they've sold, but they've sold a chunk, and all the money goes to them. And I quite like the idea that somewhere, someone at some point will be matched from the money raised from that book.
That's amazing. It's not just a small... It's not doing a charity gig, is it?
It isn't. It's a bit of time. Lot of effort, but I did enjoy writing it. And I said to my wife, it's like my playing the piano. Me writing a really good story is like me playing the piano. And I can't play the piano, but I can write.
Okay, fair enough. That's good to use that. Yeah. Well, on a far smaller scale, I'm all for the donor thing and all that, the matching thing, because I've got someone else's cornea. I had a corneal transplant last year.
You're bionic.
I am bionic.
You need to tell me about your bladder
again.
I've got a fake bladder.
I've got a pun inbuilt inside of me, actually, because they call it a neo bladder, because it's a new bladder.
Right, yeah.
Because it's a bladder that I wasn't born with, but it's now mine. I call it my step bladder, so that's called that. So I've got a step bladder.
You've done that before on stage.
I have done that on stage. You can tell.
That was too neat.
I went into a bit there.
That was too neat.
And I have got someone else's cornea, but I have no joke about that.
So why is that then?
I had a thing called keratoconus, which affects mostly...
Isn't she a singer?
She was. There you go. We've been in and out here.
Yes, I do have a dodgy bladder, and I have a dodgy left eye. Maybe we'll do more on those in a future week, but this week it's movie week, so let's not go there. Sign up to Organ Donor Register, both for my cornea, and also, not only that, the Anthony Nolan Trust. Do look out for what they're doing as well, Dom's chosen charity. That's Charity Corner here in our seven-sided room, but we couldn't let Dom go until he visits Name Dropper's Nook and spills all about how to get your own son to become the most famous arachnid-based superhero on the planet.
So listen, it's a great story. Who knew? Who knew this was going to happen? Just for people who don't know, my eldest son is called Tom. He's 19, and he is Spider-Man. And people listening now go, oh, okay, so he's playing in a TV show. He's an animator in a comic. No, he's the Spider-Man. He's Marvel's new Spider-Man. So he's a movie star.
That's bizarre, isn't it?
Just it's mad, isn't say it? That. It's mad. Yeah. But what's even more odd is that there was nothing. There was nothing from Nikki and I, to orchestrate this.
So you never liked spiders particularly? You've never been fans of
No, there's no drama school, there's no private school, there's no acting lessons or anything. It genuinely was one of those sort of, the lottery when it came out, the big finger came down. But it was just one of those moments, really, sort of serendipity. He was spotted in a very remedial sort of Saturday afternoon disco dancing class. It was really, it was just very remedial, And from there, to cut a long story short, he ended up playing Billy in the West End.
So this is Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
That's right.
They trained him. They really liked his look and what have you. So they trained him. And he's a very determined little boy. He was only 9 at the time. So then he finished doing that after a couple of years. And then he was seen on YouTube, and a casting agent liked the look of him and got him in for a meeting. He ended up in a movie called The Impossible.
That's the first time I saw him. I saw that film, and I cried my little
eyes
out.
It's really pretty.
I do remember I stayed in that cinema until the lights came up at the end, thinking,
It's pretty harrowing.
It's an amazing film.
True story, and we went to Thailand. So we had this extraordinary experience, of going to Thailand to see the film being made. My little boy was only 13 or 14, and then he ended up getting longlisted for an Oscar.
He's the best. I've seen the film twice now.
Have you really?
He's the best thing in it.
He's amazing in it. It'd be very churlish for me to say he isn't talented. He just got lucky. He is he's a very assured boy, which I think is heartening as a parent. And he's good. He's convincing and he's pretty. So that all helps. Mm. And by the way, I must have a very attractive wife because anyone who knows me. So yeah, so that really that was the start of it all. Mm. And since then, there's no the interest hasn't waned.
Right.
And there's been lots of film roles that have come in for Tom, and he's done them and enjoyed them. So he's had a very unusual schooling. But anyway, it ended up last year with him being cast as Spider-Man. It was very protracted. The you know, when the first phone call came in, that they're going to do a new Spider-Man, they're looking for a lead, obviously. And it was a case of 1,500 kids sending in tapes.
Wow.
And Tom started that rigmarole. And I just said to Tom, what an exciting prospect, however far you get. And I always thought he would be a great Spider-Man. He's a fantastic little gymnast, and he's right, very lithe. Yes. But I never imagined that it would transpire with little Tom being cast. And then and when he was cast, I just thought, wow, you know, it's just extraordinary. You know, you try and make your own career and become a showbiz celebrity. I've tried certainly to become famous and become a household name like Lee Mack and Eddie Izzard and stuff. Didn't quite work out for me. And then inadvertently, who knew, my little boy was going, hey, Dad, don't worry about it, man. I'm going to be Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it feels like a strange time to be talking about this because I suppose the film's not out yet.
No.
Are they making it at the minute? Or
well, he's made one. He's made Captain America.
Okay.
So that's when he's introduced to the world in the suit with the muscles.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's so exciting. He's in California today.
Right.
I'm in Stoke.
Okay, there you go. Stoke. That's not Stoke, California, Stoke, Oregon. It's Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's a tough gig.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's in California, I'm in Stoke.
So this thing at the minute, you talk about the household name thing, at the minute, people might have seen The Impossible, they might have seen Billy Elliot even, or heard this thing.
A number of other films, but he's not recognised.
But this time next year, you know, suddenly this name will be out there.
So annoying. So annoying, he's going to be so famous.
But then it's Tom Holland, they'll go Tom or Dom? Dom Holland, and suddenly, you know, you get...
Well, you know what? I never want to compromise Tom, okay? I wrote a blog called Eclipsed, and it's a very heartfelt story of a father being equally as proud as he was bemused by what's happening to him and his family. And it was pretty honest, and I wrote a non-fiction book called How Tom Holland Eclipsed His Dad. And it's the whole story of how the kid was discovered and how he got to a red carpet in Los Angeles. And I always said, Tom, I'm going to stop writing now because I don't want to chronicle our lives and I don't want to intrude in our lives. So I wrote sort of stuff that's accessible. But I just felt after then, you can now consume either career.
Right.
In cinemas around the world or village halls in England.
absolutely, in the Stoke area. Amazing.
But I never want to compromise Tom either. No, so the idea, people say to me, gosh, Dom, are you going to give up work? And I'll say, based on, well, you know, Tom's Spider-Man. I think, well, first of all, it's Tom's career.
Yeah.
Second of all, I really enjoy my job. And I still have hopes that that phone call comes in and says, hey, Dom, come and do a Saturday Night Live at the Apollo. And everyone at home goes, oh, he's a funny guy. Let's go and watch him work.
Yeah.
So I still have those hopes. And equally, people have said, you know, would you try and get a role in the film? And I've said, are you mad? Are you honestly thinking? I'm going to say, hey, Tom, can you? Are they looking for any funny-looking... You know, 50-somethings.
What's Uncle, whatever he's called. Uncle Tom. Uncle Tom, the Spider-Man guy.
I don't mind if I get killed, Tom, as long as I'm on screen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So no, I'm never going to do that. But I am enjoying, of course I'm enjoying it. Who wouldn't, right? I mean, because, you know, I remember Tom as well. This is another, and I don't think this is unique to my family, but certainly I could show you photographs of Tom's first, from probably the age of 2 to the age of 7. We have birthday pictures of every birthday, and it's a Spider-Man cake and a Spider-Man outfit.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so for 5 years, he was Spider-Man, and so so now he's a real Spider-Man.
And there's a gap.
Yeah,
and then now he's gone. We've got a five-year-old boy we have, and he loves Spider-Man. He's never seen... You know, he's read the comic, and that's it. He's never even seen it on TV.
Of course.
And he's already talking about Spider-Man. I'm going, this kid doesn't even know that there's a film of Spider-Man, let alone having seen it, let alone me trying to explain to him where I'm coming today to speak to
Spider-Man's dad.
I mean, none of this quite computes in his head, you know. So,
but, you know, he'll get to know it, and he can meet Tom. It's nice. I mean, I love the accessibility that my friends have, because they've all got kids, and I'm often having dad say, oh, by the Dom, you wouldn't mind, would you, if I could have a signed photo?
Yeah.
Of me?
Of course.
No.
Well, let's ask a child then about their movie-going experience. Over there in the corner, we've got editor of Empire magazine, Nev Pierce, former editor, and first getting in with her film reviews, my three-year-old daughter. So, hello, daughter.
Hello.
We're talking about films this week, movies and films. What's your favourite film? Have you got a favourite film?
Yes.
What's your favourite film?
Banana.
Oh, Minions.
Yeah.
Minions is good, isn't it? Okay, would you like to give us a film review? What did you think of Minions?
Good.
What, do you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did you particularly like about it?
Them taking the Queen's crown away.
Taking the Queen's crown away?
Yeah.
Oh, that is good, isn't it? That's good. Do you think all films should have that?
Yeah.
Have you got any other favourite films?
Let It Go.
Oh, Frozen.
Yeah.
And what do you like about Frozen?
Anna going into the Ice Palace.
Anna into the Ice Palace, that's good, isn't it? So you like Minions and Frozen, so you like Anna Banana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shall we go and talk to Dumlet Holland again?
That's a good idea.
Do you think it helps that you've
not really, because I've not had anything. No, not really. People ask me that. I know what you're going to ask me. Does it help that I've been in the business and I've had some level of fame? I have nothing like. I'm never going to experience what Tom's going to experience, because there's people feel that they own the character.
Right.
So there are people on the internet now who have declared their dying, abiding love for the boy.
Right.
And that slightly worries me because they don't know who he is, and he. I just think that will quickly become quite wearing.
Mm.
So I've said to Tom, you are going to become very well-known, Tom. The longer we can delay that, the better.
Sure.
I read a quote by Benedict Cumberbatch, and they said, what's your greatest... something along the lines of, what's the greatest thing that's ever happened to you? And his answer was, I became famous in my 30s, not in my teens.
Right.
So I think what he's saying is, I had a chance to live, and now I live in a bubble. And I think that's interesting. Now Tom won't have that luxury, because he's going to be 20 when the first movie comes out.
Wow.
Okay, so that's going to be hard. It's going to be sort of One Direction type.
Yes.
And that'll be a bit boring, because when you want to go for a Nando's with your mates, and you can't, because what he does now is he goes to these crazy clubs in London where only people can go.
Right.
Because they know who you are on the door.
Yes.
So he said to me that he came home from a drink. He said, I just had a chat with David Beckham. I said, what do you mean, where? He said, I was in this club and Beckham was there. And he said, how are you in this club? He said, oh, I'm Tom Holland, and have a chat. So he's mixing with people who are quite rarefied. But he's also he's going to areas which are quite remote. And I quite like the idea of going to a pub with your mates and having a Thai meal and a couple of pints, as opposed to a really place in Greek Street or something, you know.
Well, you have to close the pub now instead.
Well, it'd be a bit boring, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's not the same.
So
you've got extras to be locals.
The Heptagon Club.
Seven guests, seven corners. The Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza.
More movie stuff coming up. Right now, as the world adjusts to the new world order, let's go live to San Diego and our American correspondent to see if the dust is settling or if it's just beginning to unsettle.
So this is American Dave.
I'm a David. I'm from America. I'm in San Diego.
Wow.
It's currently 86 degrees and there's not a cloud in the sky, so very depressing.
I've been to your place in San Diego once, and it was amazing.
I have your passes to SeaWorld, you know, so I look at all the animals that shouldn't be in the tanks, you know. What I really feel is like if I were an animal, you know, that lived off of sound, and every sound I made bounced off of a thing, and then there was crowds cheering sounds, that would drive me mad,
of course.
You know.
Yeah.
And then of course I cheer. So, yes, I'm in America. It's wonderful. I have an American accent. Hopefully you can tell.
Definitely. We can definitely tell that. Speaking of America, you had some big news recently in America with that election result, hey?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. It brings up a big point. Like, do you want one person being in charge of saying, okay, let's bomb somebody with nuclear weapons that will destroy all of humanity? You know, just allow that to occur.
Yes, okay.
So, we got a chance to, you know, work through the collective unconscious of racism and xenophobia, like you're an other, so you Brits are others.
Thank you.
Right?
And I felt that personally. When you said you're an other, that was me. That was
You're an other. We don't want any Brits or anyone from any other country coming into our country and doing things that we don't want you to do. And we're not going to tell you exactly what we don't want, but we don't like you. And we want you to stay away because we're great, because we're America.
All right, okay. Steady. The Tea Party was a long time ago, all right? Okay.
Yes, yes, no.
Yeah.
Look, I love you guys. Okay. I don't care. You know, I think everyone, this is my personal opinion of wisdom. All right, if you're on the planet, you have a right to exist wherever you are.
Okay, great.
There's a, you know, I don't want to send you anywhere anywhere else.
Okay, so do you have a right then to move to somewhere else? If you have a right to be wherever you are, do you have a right to then go to somewhere else and be?
I think so.
I think so as well. It'd be nice.
I think so. I mean, this is just a personal opinion, right? Because it's just a border, right? We just make it up.
Hmm.
We just put a wall there. The other, I want you to feel worse than me. Okay, I want you to feel worse than me because you're on the other side of that wall.
Let me tell you this. You have to build a wall. You have to build a wall. Where do you build it? Where's your wall going? If you had to build a wall, where does it go?
Like, for me, anywhere that I can see. As far as I can see, all right, I want to see a wall at the very end.
Okay.
Of anywhere. All right, just so I know that everywhere around me that I can see is safe. And everything on the other side of what I can see is out there is other, and I don't want to ever see you.
So it's a horizon wall, by the sounds of it.
It's a horizon wall.
Okay.
And I will allow people to come into that space. Like, there'll be a door, right? Now I can just do it by Wi-Fi, just press a button and allow you to walk into my wall. But I want it to move, you know, wherever I am. I just want it to...
So it's a movable wall. If it's a movable wall, maybe we should be paying people to dress up as the wall and be the wall, and then they can move around.
Yeah.
And then that's a job creation scheme. Everyone's talking about creating jobs.
Yes.
Someone can be the wall, can't they?
Right, exactly. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
On that far away. That's an idea.
Okay.
You know, I don't think we should have any wall.
No.
I think eventually all this stuff, right, this great, amazing nation of America, this great, amazing nation of Brits... you know, it's okay that we have different accents.
Yeah.
And if you're going to run around and start killing people, we should probably separate you from the other people.
That's maybe the wall is to block the people who are doing the killing people on the one side, and then everyone else.
Right,
on the other
side. That doesn't work like that, right? I mean, the only way you're going to know if someone starts killing people is if they actually start doing it.
That's true.
Well, because it's interesting, because I have two kids now, right? Mm. So little kids. And they of course get all caught up in that's my toy, that's my thing, and you're the other. How dare you not give me my thing? You know, because that's mine, that little toy, right?
So are you saying that all children are Donald Trump's, or are you saying that Donald Trump is a child? I don't know quite which one.
Well, that's a good point.
Well, let's ask one then, shall we? Time to wake up my 3-year-old again.
Do you know who the new president is of America?
No.
Do you know his name, the man on the TV?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans. No, it's not Chris Evans. The man with the floppy hair. Donald...
Trump.
All right, okay. Do you remember what you said when we saw the news report and he was standing there with two men either side of him saying that he'd won? Do you remember what you said? Where are all the ladies? I know, it was a shame, wasn't it? Well, hopefully they're only about 4 years away, but let's find out.
The insanity of being identified with other and the mind and wanting to be right and then trying to defend yourself against someone who will say anything, right, that comes into their head.
Yeah.
And then all the people who listen to whatever that and think it's just amazing because he's saying exactly what I'm thinking, right? There are millions of people who believe that he is saying exactly what they're thinking. So we get a window into what, you know, what? I don't know, 500 million people in our country are thinking.
How terrifying.
Are you terrified? Yeah, I don't know. It is terrifying, yes. If you ever actually talk to those people, they seem pretty normal. You know, they like ball and they, you know, you can joke around with them and stuff. And they're not terrible. They're just, that's what they're thinking.
Of course. Well, I wouldn't want a window into what I'm thinking most of the time, so that's fine.
Exactly, right? Yeah, so we get a window. So it's sort of like a mirror, like into our own thinking, right?
Yeah.
Am I thinking, oh, there's someone walking down the street and they've got a different skin color, and am I judging them? Mm. Oh, look at that.
Now, our rule here is 7 guests per week, so we've had American Dave, and here's another guest. It's British Dave.
let us go down to the bloody store and get in the queue and buy some tea and crumpets and listen to Paul McCartney and buy me some fish and chips with the newspaper. And I would like to go down to the pub and have a Boddington's with my mates at the pub. Thank you.
What's great there is not only have you nailed the accent, but also the stereotypical British day.
That is, I brought it all in, right?
That was what,
I
that's, it all in. That's what I've done today, basically. I think you're ready for TV and movie work over here. I think you could blend in.
Speaking of movies, it's movie night here on the Heptagon Club. Perhaps the best way to comprehend this Trumpian world is that this is an alternative reality. You know, somewhere else, he's still a tired, washed-up reality TV star. And just we're in the horrid bit of Back to the Future Part 2, basically, when Biff is the president of the world or whatever. Or it's the alternative ending to The Dead Zone. This is how 2016 has turned out. Anyway, back to some genuine Brits from my old podcast, Movie Banter. My pals John Sands and Jen Masters with this week's quickfire questions.
In the movie of your life, forget who would play you. What's the genre and the runtime and the rating?
film noir.
Film noir.
Why not?
Yeah, very good. Runtime.
Film noir. Not too long, because let's face it, it's pretty intense.
Short life. Okay. So,
we'll go, no, because you've got to leave them on a cliffhanger.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Hey. So I'm going to say like 72 minutes.
72, right. 72 barely minutes. A feature.
60 minutes makes it a feature.
That's 50, what they say.
55, actually.
55 makes it a
rating,
feature. Yeah.
It's got to be 15, because that's my average age so far.
What, in life? What?
No, age 15, because you've got to have some naughty words and some naughty things, but nothing too bad.
Okay.
Nothing too bad.
Good.
Come on, guys, what
did
you have?
Genre, runtime, rating. I need 18 rating. I've got to be able to let rip with the swearing.
Yep. Animation.
Really? It's only an insight there.
You don't get a choice.
No, I'm assuming rom-com, but a disappointing one.
An 18 rated...
No, the trouble is...
What 18 rated rom-com?
You say you've never...
Seven!
Is that a rom-com that I misread on this time?
Yeah, she's just a head in a box, but he's a hard-bitten policeman.
She was ahead of her time.
They've got to make it work.
Oh, no.
Seven chances for...
Also, thanks to my friends Russ and Owen, you heard bits of in there, but seven a week is our rule and our guideline on this show. Here is another guideline. We try and encourage, once a week, a bring-a-bottle moment, a chance for you to give something back to us just by joining in. And so if it's a free podcast, let's keep it that way. Sometimes that's to help us with an iTunes rating or like us on Facebook. This week, your chance to give something back is simply this. Drop an email to a person of influence about this podcast. Recommend us. Perhaps a local magazine, a newspaper journalist, a blogger, someone who can help give us a leg up. Go on. Then we can grow more. Listen, I'll be inclined to make more of these. So if you would help us out that way, have a think who you know in your email address book who might be able to give us a little mention, a write-up, a plug, or just a listen. All are welcome here. I thank you.
So it's movie night here at the Heptagon Club. Movie night or movie day, which depends on the time of day you're listening. And all these exciting guests, including over here, Jez Gibson.
Hello, Paul.
Jez,
how are you?
Very well, thank you. A man who is... taken on the mainstream cinemas and vanquished.
Paul, in this very Heptagon Club, you're finding a corner where there is actually a very small, polite revolution beginning.
I like a polite revolution.
Yeah, well, it's Guildford, so, you know...
We
wouldn't want to go too violent to make our point. In fact, even our fair county, some people have maybe thought we should change it to Surrey.
Rather than Surrey. I like it.
I fell in love with film 36 years ago. I saw Star Wars Episode 4 A New Hope in black and white. On a portable black and white TV.
Oh, okay.
On a top load of VHS cassette.
I was thinking, I didn't know they released a black and white version, but of course,
it was colour, but you retrofitted it, that's now available in 2D as well. So,
yes.
But, all those years ago at 6 years old, kind of escaped the Earth and fell into this George Lucas universe. And that's when the magic of film first got me, and it's been with me ever since. And the initial thing was this love of film, where I was then recreating, you know, scenes terribly and all that kind of stuff. Actually, then sort of had a foray of thinking I might be a film director, and briefly worked for Tiger Aspect Productions. which was the original gang back then was Eric Fellner and Tim, I've forgotten the surname. Back in the day it was Tiger Rasp, but he was working on a TV production. It had Ray Winstein and it was called Births, Marriages and Deaths.
Oh, yes.
And I was a runner, which basically meant that they might as well just call you doormat, really.
Yeah, okay.
So you made the tea, you did the photocopying, and got told to go and buy random props from various places around Elstree, around the Boreham Wood, around. And this was in the studios where they filmed Star Wars, you know, so
okay.
quite exciting, you know, to be on the set. But it made it abundantly clear to me that actually to be a film director, you've got to be single-minded, you've got to be relentless, you've got to have a very established network from either family or those that you know who are in a position where they can give you an opportunity. Or you've got to be one of those people like a Quentin Tarantino or a Robert Rodriguez who have been film nerds, a bit like I was, you know, going to the video shop, watching relentless amounts of films. I thought, you know, I'm going to make a movie. I'd like to make a movie. And you do whatever it takes. You almost become a guerrilla filmmaker, and then maybe you get your break.
More on Jez's cinema events venture in a mo, but first I just want to catch Nev Pierce, former editor of Total Film and then Empire Magazine, and now he's jumped ship further to make films. He's in a very noisy part of the Heptagon Club, so forgive that. We will cut back to a quieter corner soon enough, I promise. So, Nev Pierce, how would you describe... What do you do? You work both sides of the movie...
Lecturer and gamekeeper.
Is that right? Yeah.
Historically a journalist, still a journalist, film journalist. I'm contributing editor Empire Film Magazine.
Right.
I've written for the Sunday Times and the Guardian, Esquire and things. And now I also write screenplays for feature films, which thus far have not been made.
Right.
And I've directed 3 short films, and I will direct feature films, he said, with false confidence.
And so at what point in this, so you're still doing the journalism style, so you're still reviewing films while making films?
I don't really review very much. I'm okay. Mostly just interview directors.
Okay, so fair enough.
I mean, occasionally I review, but that's become less necessary and also less pleasant because you suddenly realise how hard it is to make anything.
Right, okay.
So if something's rubbish, you just feel a bit bad about saying it's rubbish.
But isn't that great that people who would say, oh, well, these journalists, these critics, let's see how they make a film, and then you go, okay.
Yeah, I think it certainly helps in some ways. I mean, I think I changed as a critic from someone I think when I first started, I used to review stuff a bit like a gleeful enemy. You want to do it like a disappointed friend. If I don't like something, I will not volunteer to review it.
Okay.
Quite often.
Okay.
You know, it's different if you've been assigned it and you have to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
If you don't like it, you're just going to say it. But generally speaking, I'm like, these days, I try and only focus on the stuff I really like.
That's nice. Yeah, yeah.
I think I've got a pretty broad taste, although if you were to identify 2 genres, it would be thrillers and westerns. Certainly westerns from growing up. And obviously, there aren't that many made now. But then something like Hell or High Water came out this week, which is a crime film, but really it's a western.
Right.
So like, it was Jeff Bridges, guns, Stetson, so I'm very happy.
That's very nice. Yeah,
so that's my film of the year. It's arguably my film of the year before I watched it.
And when you make the films then, so you did 3 last year, didn't you?
Yeah, I did 2 thrillers and a comedy.
I read on your website something about procrastinating, time-wasting to a professional level or something like that. And yet actually last year you made 3 films.
Well,
that's pretty good.
The difference is learning... productive procrastination. So procrastinate on the thing that's really important and the thing that's actually going to pay your rent. Avoid that by doing the things that actually are going to cost you money. So the short film is kind of productive procrastination. That's probably been, I mean, it's flippant, but actually not entirely flippant. That's probably been the change in the last couple of years. It's like, well, if I'm going to have some avoidance, do something you should enjoy.
I know what you mean. It's sort of that old alt-tabbing, I find, is a common verb I use in my house. You know, having those several projects open at once and think, I've righted a block there, let's do this one instead.
I listened to a Josh Whedon podcast where he called it, not multitasking, omnitasking. In terms of, he focuses on one thing very strongly at a time. Now, it doesn't mean that he won't change, he'll do a lot of stuff in a day, but like, he'll make sure he just focuses on that one thing, I don't really, this is struggling with this, let's flip over.
So your 3 films last year then,
yeah.
3 short films you did then, with Jason Fleming, I believe.
No, Jason's a lovely guy, a terrific actor, I was very lucky to have him. Lucy Boynton, who's going to be a movie star, and I'll end up looking prescient, even though I was just lucky.
Right.
Alice Lowe, who somewhat humiliatingly, we didn't put it online yet because it's got to go through festivals. Since we shot that, Alice was 6 months pregnant when we shot that. She subsequently, I think, written, directed,
yes,
and released a feature film at the Venice Film Festival.
Is this the Prevenge?
Oh, that's a little humiliating.
There used to be 4 cinemas in Guildford, now 1 multiplex.
Four?
4 cinemas in Guildford.
I didn't know that.
And now look, some of them are restaurants or shops or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I do recall when I first lived in Guildford, well, I was at school in Guildford, top of the high street, there's the old Odeon.
That's right.
Which was the first 18 I ever saw.
And you were 13.
I don't know if I was quite 18.
I won't tell your parents.
But 18 enough, you know. And that was 7.
She's just a head in a box.
I remember going there myself, and there was actually a bucket and a leaking roof, and you would be watching Jurassic Park with actually the sound of a drop hitting into the bucket.
Nice.
Which they didn't quite sync with a little drop in the glass at the time, but that would have been
That would have been nice. Yeah, that would have been a good touch.
So I am doing monthly film nights, which launched last October, which was the Blues Brothers. And the thing which was a bit different was I chose an iconic film which I thought would entertain people on a variety of different levels. So it's cult, you've got the music, you know, you've got John Belushi, you've got the outfits.
You've got John Belushi then?
We've got John Belushi.
That is a coup.
Now, how I haven't got paid properly out of that.
I know, come on.
But, you know, the idea was that people walked in, that, you know, some people are dressed up. I hired a function room in the back of a pub because the budgets I'm currently
fine.
People could sit at a table, pull up a chair, they could order a drink, they could have some food come to the table, but welcomed personally and made an invite into an experience. This is an event you're part of.
So you're not sort of just shunted through, you've paid for your popcorn, go and get a seat.
No.
It's dress up, it's music. The film's part of the experience, but you know, it's
And on that night, we had this fantastic blues trio who played leading up to the thing. There was an interval, there was more music. You know, people literally had inflatable blow up instruments where they were.
Yeah, well, I came to Whiplash,
yeah, of course, that
which
was number two.
That was number two, and that was the drums there before the show.
That's right,
before the film. Well, the show was the show, you know, there's a show in 3D of a person there. Banging away at a drum kit like you would not believe, and then you see the film.
Fantastic, Tull Bryant, who's a session musician, you know, who is an extremely talented guy from Brighton, I believe Brighton. But he came up, and we had this, and he actually rehearsed effectively what was a 10-minute drum solo, but he put different sequences in it, which mapped different styles that were being played throughout the film.
Awesome,
and then
very nice.
And then we went into the film, and people were clapping actually rhythmically with that as well.
I particularly love going to the pictures, and I think there's something about the experience of sitting there and. The collective experience of waiting for magic, basically. So I always feel really look forward to it, which TV doesn't supply in the same way, but at the same time TV supplies a lot more freedom and a lot more diversity these days in terms of what stories you can tell, because it doesn't require such a degree of spectacle. So I think, you know, you've got to look at what Spielberg and Lucas particularly were saying probably 15-20 years ago about the fact that the theatrical experience is going to become more like a theatrical experience, you know, it's going to be more expensive, which it is, and more of an event, and you're going to see re-releases of older films as well.
Well, people might have heard of Secret Cinema, for example, which is great, but seems to have very swiftly grown out of control to a degree where I look and go, that's a great idea, I can't afford to go, and, you know, the cost of the thing being figures plus cosplay to dress up as a stormtrooper, whatever it is, you know, you're looking at, you know, mortgaging a house to afford that.
And you've got to go to London, you've got to get the train and back. I went to the Empire Strikes Back last year, which was fantastic, but it was £80 a ticket, adding food, train fare, and all the dress up gear, you're looking at £150 for a night of the flicks.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, to be fair. Yeah. But what if you could have something where it's not a £5 film club, it's not £20 going to the Odeon for your 3D glasses and your overpriced popcorn and Pepsi, but something which is memorably good and that little bit different to the point where you're going, what's the next one going to be? What if one could be where there's just a group of people who are established, you know each other through schools? What if those people could come together and it could be just a school hall, it could be a church hall, it could be a village hall? And you give them kind of a model and you can go out and give them the license to let go. And they can have a Blues Brothers, they can have a whatever it may be. It could be, you know, a sci-fi event where it's just, you know, you're just sitting there and enjoying the spectacle of the film. And then some of the other ideas is, you know, we've got a college or a university down the road. What if you could do Ferris Bueller's Day Off or the Breakfast Club in a college? What if you could do Slumdog Millionaire and you actually had a Bollywood dance class? So it's got to be films where they've just got a slight quality control. There could be a cult classic or it could be a modern classic. You know, do a sci-fi spectacular where Thermopolis reaches for the stars. And there's a brilliant film that's just come out called Arrival. You could do, you know, anything from Gravity to Interstellar. What if you did The Martian, where Matt Damon's stranded with that iPod and he's just got that disco soundtrack? What if you did The Martian and you did a silent disco?
And it was just brilliant.
So you have five people get dressed up and you do Mars cocktails. You know, so that's the kind of scope.
I hear that Arrival, the aliens,
in Arrival. Have you seen Arrival?
I have seen Arrival.
The aliens,
I don't tell people too much,
are called heptapods.
That's right.
Good idea for a podcast.
That's
hey,
like what you did there.
This is the original heptapod, Paul, is right here.
Have you done this before, Paul? There was a little kind of overarching narrative there. I think that was fantastic.
My plan is coming together.
And was Spider-Man any part of the creating the heptapod?
I don't know.
And Nev Pearce maybe is maybe part of the screenwriting and
could be. Maybe this is we've all put it together.
Well, that could be interesting.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the heptapod, the alien in Arrival, and us. We are the heptapod, your favourite seven-sided, seven-guested podcast. And how about those seven references? Pure chance. How about that? We had seven and well, Sesevenon, isn't it? Because it's got the number seven instead of the V. So we'll call it Sesevenon for now. Yeah, we're on paul@paulcarenza.com. If you'd like to drop us a line, feel free. Join our Facebook group. Rate us on iTunes. Tell a friend about us. By all means. Now, it will be the full 3-week turnaround for the next podcast, I'm afraid. 3 to 4 weeks, no fortnight turnaround this time. Busy time of year. I've got work, which is great. So in the next few weeks, I've got a book to write. I've got the BBC Music Awards to script, a Morecambe and Wise special to help write. Not with them, alas, but never mind. And a sitcom for Sky we're polishing off for next year. Lots of gigs to do. Comedians and Carols as well, up and down the country, doing these Christmas shows. Lots of details on all that. paulcarenza.com if you'd like to see us live or find out what I'm up to via the mailing list. Do subscribe at paulcarenza.com or find me on Facebook. Let's have one last visit to the bay window of wisdom for our American correspondent, American Dave.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about, and you know, I have a theory that I'm working on because I have two little kids.
Yeah.
I have a one-year-old, a four-year-old. They're girls, okay?
Okay.
And I've just noticed something. So I think when we're adults, right, we want to relive periods in our childhood, right, and be in that state of being, right, of that state of living, right, and that state of consciousness. So sometimes we do drugs, okay, to kind of go back to that period, all right? So what I've noticed is that from year 0 to 1, all right, newborns, the kids are on acid, you know, or mushrooms, right, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, everything is just so amazing and weird, right? Because you just appear in this body on this planet, and you're like blue, you know, blue thing. What is this, right? It's amazing. A raisin. Whoa. Raisin.
Dude, a raisin. Whoa, that's my raisin. American accent there. Dude, I just had
yes,
dude.
Yes. Like, wow, okay, you know, sound of fan, you know, like, whoa. Okay. I want to say 1 to 3, right? They're toddlers. They're sort of wandering around. All right. So that's when you're drunk. Okay. Right. You're like, yes, you take food, right? And you put it in your mouth and you're like, yum, 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 yum. And then you put your hand in your mouth, right? And that starts gumming up your hand and you're like, this is interesting. And then all of a sudden you like throw it up, right? You know,
yeah,
and you
just yeah. start walking
with and like nothing's going on.
There's a bit of so pitting yourself and all that. Yeah, yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then, right, then if you want to be an adult and you want to go back to like the age of like 3 to, I don't know, I've only got a 4-year-old, so I haven't gone beyond this,
okay,
right? But it's something like meth or ecstasy where you're just high and you're happy and everything is freaking great and you're just having a blast for hours until you freaking crash, right? And you're just done.
Mm.
Like, life is over, and you have no energy, and it's everyone else's fault, and you just want to lie in bed all day and be totally sad and angry until you take your meth again, which is, you know, being a kid,
yeah,
right? So I think that's what – yeah, anyway, that's my theory. It's a working theory.
Okay.
I'd be
curious to check in again a few years down the line. See what drugs have kicked in for the kids come out like 8 or 9 or something.
I don't know what's left, right?
Yeah, like,
left?
You've used them all up. This is it.
You know, like, what other drug are you going to take after that to get back to, like, what, 6? Right now, do you dream about going back to be a 6-year-old, you know? Like, I don't know if you do, you know. Oh, I want to go and feel what it was like when I was in, you know, first grade and someone took my notebook, you know, like... Yeah. Like, you don't really want to go back to that, per se.
No, you know? Exactly. I think you've peaked at 0 to 5, I think, really.
Yeah, I do.
It's downhill from there. Sad, isn't it? You just learn about taxation and, you know, oh, dear.
Yeah. There's no need. You can have happiness without any...
Exactly. Without any drugs, without any kids. You don't need them. You don't need them. Life is simpler. Just exist.
No distractions.
Exactly.
I have this dream of like just being on a mountaintop, all my needs met, you know, and no children, no need for work, you know, like yeah, we wouldn't do anything, like we'd sit there like a lump, like sort of in stasis, you know, but yeah, I mean that's sort of the place I go to, you know, when I get a little overwhelmed by the situation.
And from that mountaintop, you can see over every wall. Over every wall in the horizon, even the horizon wall, you can see right over it. This is it.
Past. Who's the big Britix person over there?
Britix.
Boris.
Brexit. You mean Brexit?
Brexit. Sorry, not Britix. That wrong.
It's meant to be Britain Exit. You see, it's not. That's why it's called Brexit, not Britix.
Right.
I think Britix is like a brand of polystyrene or something like that.
So Boris, that Boris person, past him.
Yep.
They are under a beautiful sky, right, on this amazing planet, okay, that we haven't destroyed yet, thankfully.
It's clearly a blue sky over in San Diego, and it's clearly a grey sky over here. But either way, they're both skies. It's the same sky. Let's remember that.
Same sky.
Right.
Thank you to all our guests this week. Oh, and Jez does want me to add the following about his Filmopolis venture in Guildford. The next event is ELF on 14th of December. And if you are a business, a venue, maybe for charity, perhaps you want to put something filmic on.
Do get in touch with me. It's Filmopolis, www.filmopolis.co.uk. And I'd love to hear from you.
We're back with seven more in mid-December, a three-week turnaround, like I said, at least three and a bit. Well, our Christmas special will star Jimmy Cricket.
Hey, you, has anybody said to you today?
Do email us, like us,
your love,
rate us.
Has made the world a better place.
The music's by Rob Halligan.
You look positively beautiful in your blue jeans.
Till next time.
It doesn't matter what you wear.
Join us for our Christmas special.
You're the best thing that's happened.